Evening, 1 Samuel 25. 1 Samuel 25. We've been in 1 Samuel for well over a year, and we're going to be here for another five chapters. And so I hope that you don't mind wading through the scripture one piece at a time. I hope when we're done with this book that you'll say that you have learn something about the great prophet Samuel. You'll learn something about David as an outlaw, that you've learned something about many characters, whether it be the Edomite Doeg or the wise woman Abigail, who we're going to talk about tonight. The last time we find David seething, he is one mad man. He sent 10 men to Nabal's. Nabal is at a time of sheep shearing, and it ought to be a festive time. It ought to be a time of joy. It ought to be a time of generosity. But yet, Nabal is a fool. That's what his name means. It means he's a foolish man. And so Nabal rails on these 10 men, these young men that David has sent to basically get some provisions for his men and their families. And because of that railing, David is mad. As a matter of fact, as John Rollins would say, David's in the skin. He's not thinking spiritually, he's thinking, I'm going to kill him is what I'm going to do. Well, evidently some of David's men, those 10 young men, and some of the shepherds that worked for Nabal, evidently they became friends. And so one of those shepherds understood from the 10 of David what was about to happen when they told David the response. He immediately goes and sees Abigail. And so the story is related to her. And while David is telling his men, strap on your swords, and he has 600 men, he leaves 200 to protect the supplies that they have and to protect their families. But he takes 400 armed men, and they're headed toward Nabal. And as they are headed that way, she's hearing this story for the first time. And so tonight, I want us to pick up in verse number 18. And we'll go through probably verse 31 tonight. And in verse 18, it says, "Then Abigail made haste." The first thing that I want you to see in our story tonight, and it's very, very simple outline tonight. The way that the passage just kind of fell out, it's a simple way to look at it. But the first thing that I want you to see found in verse 18 and also 19 is the speed in which she acts, or the speed of her plan. So she made haste. Now, why did circumstances dictate that it needed to be done quickly? Well, it mattered because it was going to save the life of every single male that lived on Nabal's property. And we will get to that here in just a moment whenever we see just a little parentheses of our outline tonight. But it's a matter of life and death. Now, there's a lot of times in our lives when it doesn't matter if you take your time or if you hurry up. As a matter of fact, most of the time, I think that it's better for us to go slow. The old Aesop fable about the tortoise and the hare. You just go slow and you be steady, and ultimately you're going to win the race. But then there are some circumstances where haste is important. An example of that is just what we prayed for just a few moments ago when Miss Melba got the word about her brother who had a heart attack. And now, immediately, they had to go to Florida, down to Steinhatchee. And so there are times when speed is needed. I don't know that there's a whole lot of time when speed's needed in an automobile, unless you're in a drag race. But I just know that in this situation that she finds herself in, she's got to act quickly because she knows about David. She knows how that he has defeated Philistine marauders after Philistine marauders. She knows how that he is a mighty warrior. She knows about the song that all the girls sing about David and his 10,000. Oh, she knows about that. There's no doubt in my mind that she's heard that song. And so the speed that we see, and so she acts quickly because she sees the dominoes as they begin to fall. She's thinking, if I don't do something, it's not going to be long before all the men around here are going to be dead. And so she makes haste. And then the second thing that I want you to see tonight, I want you to see the supplies that are sent. Look with me at verse 18 again, and let's just think about the magnitude of what she is sending, all right? 200 loaves. Just imagine 200 loaves of bread about that long, and she already has them baked. Now, the preparation for this is staggering for me. Evidently, this woman was a planner. I couldn't help but think about how that Proverbs 31 describes the woman of Proverbs 31, the virtuous woman, and how that what she does is she prepares, and all of her children have clothes, and her husband is spoken of in the gates of the city. Why? Because his wife is such a smart woman. And that's all I'm seeing whenever I'm thinking about Abigail. She's telling people quickly. She's pointing out, you get the bread. You do this. You do that. And so she begins with 200 loaves of bread. That means that they can begin to break that bread and everybody's going to get something to eat to knock the edge off. But not only that, there's going to be 2 bottles of wine. Now, that doesn't mean a bottle like you would see in a grocery store, not something like this. The bottle here is a wine skin. And what it usually consists of is it is the skin, most likely of a goat. And it has been cured out. Probably somehow it's probably been tanned, and then it's been sewn together into a bag shape, and then they would take probably one of the legs or possibly the neck, and they would make it to where there would be a little neck on it, hence we get the term bottleneck, and then it would be folded over and somehow secured. And that's why in the New Testament it says that you don't take new wine and put it in old skins, because the old skins have already stretched as far as they can. Well, when the fermentation begins to take place, it'll just split the bag and all the juice goes everywhere. And so they have these huge bags of wine that they have decided to send. So you've got the bread and you've got the wine. And then you've got 5 sheep ready dressed. Now you think about that. 5 sheep. Now, a sheep is longer than this pulpit is wide. So we're probably talking about that long. One of the neat things that I saw the first time I was in Israel was I saw a flock of sheep come through town. Not Jerusalem, but we were in a town, and we were sitting there, and I'm trying to figure out what I can have for lunch because I'm not trusting anything on that first trip. You know, all I'm thinking is Mexico and Montezuma's revenge, and I'm thinking, that's not happening to me. And so I'm sitting there, I'm drinking a bottle of water, And I got a pack of crackers that looked like something from one of our cracker companies, maybe cheese and peanut butter. And I'm sitting there, and all of a sudden I look out to my right, and right down the road comes a flock of sheep. There must have been 150 of them. And I mean, they're moving along at a pretty good clip. And I just kind of got my phone out, and I go over and I start trying to take pictures of these things. And before I really could get any pictures of any number, I think I got maybe three or four, those things were already past me and were heading down another street. And I'm thinking, I wonder if that guy brings these sheep through town every day. But it was crazy. I mean, you can just imagine. About the craziest thing that I remember hearing recently is a few years ago, Danny and Carol Knight's son, Philip, lived over in Gratis. And there was, at the crossroads in Gratis, there was a country store that's there. And there was a guy that rode a longhorn steer and hooked it up at the hitching post at the Gratis store. He just rode it into town. And I'm thinking, who in the world in their right mind would get on a steer that big and go for a ride? I think cowboys are about half nuts anyway. You know? And so these guys say, get them five sheep. Or she says, get them five sheep to the guys. And you know what? They're already dressed. There's no killing them. There's no gutting them, field dressing them, getting them ready. No, they have already been butchered, and they're ready for something. Possibly it was ready for the sheep shearing time. But she's thinking, the party's going to have to wait, and they're just going to have to get some more sheep because these sheep are going to David. Now, Nabal doesn't know a single thing about this. We'll pick that up next week. But she has bread, she has wine, and she has sheep that are ready dressed. But not only that, she's got five measures of parched corn. Now, what is parched corn? It's barley corn. It's kind of a treat where that you would just, like we eat popcorn watching television, they would just reach in and they would take the parched barley corn and they would just pop it in their mouth. And so this was not something that, you know, that these men normally would have. But it gets better than that, all right? I mean, we see that she has the corn. She's got 100 clusters of raisins. Not 100 raisins, but clusters of raisins. Now, I don't know how big the cluster was. I don't know if it was, you know, big as a football. But I just know there was 100 of them. And I know that Israel, you know, is known for its fruit. I heard a humorous story one time. There was a preacher, and he was preaching about when the spies went across the Jordan River into the Promised Land. And they brought back those clusters of grapes. And he said that those clusters of grapes were huge. They were so big that it took two men to carry the clusters. And he said, and when one of those guys got to the Jordan River and saw how high it was and knew he was going to have to swim, what he did was he took one of the grapes and he mashed the goody out of it and put it on his head for a bathing cap. Now that's an imagination right there. But she had 100 clusters of grapes that she was sending. But not only that, she had 200 cakes of figs. Now we're talking nice size cakes. We're not talking 200 fig Newtons, all right? And I love fig Newtons. Matter of fact, I can eat a whole sleeve by myself in one sitting. I mean, them figs are just good. I remember one time years ago, there was an old guy that was selling a pickup truck, and so I was going to buy it. And he goes, you ever have any brown turkey figs? And I said, well, it's been a while. He said, why don't you go taste those off that tree right there? And I went over and I pulled that fig off and I ate it and I thought, that's one of the finest figs I've ever had. Next thing I know, I'm thinking about planting fig trees in my backyard. And so there's the fig pies that she's got, these little cakes. And what did she do? She laid them on the asses. So in other words, we see that this woman was a generous woman. Does that not tell us how we ought to be in our lives? We ought to be a generous people. We ought to do our best to try to help our brothers and sisters in their time of need. And we ought to do it as often as we possibly can. John Wesley used to say, earn all you can, give all you can, save all you can. And all I'm thinking is, well, that's three big things to do there, but we ought to try to do it. And so we see her generosity. Now, just think about this. The original 10 men that they had, there's no way that those 10 men, and it doesn't say anything about them riding to see Nabal. I have not read anything that I remember. Perhaps you can correct me on this, but as I've been reading through the whole book of Samuel, David's men, they're a walking army. I haven't seen a whole lot about David's men riding anywhere. They just kind of walk. And so you've got these 10 men that probably walked to Nabal's place where he was shearing the sheep. If those 10 men would have tried to carry everything that she has given to put on the back of those asses, they couldn't have done it. So she was more generous than anything that David was even asking for. Well, not only do we see her generosity, but I want you to notice this was prime stuff. This was, if we would say today, this was U.S. choice. All right? You're talking about things that the average soldier that lives living hard, you know, he's living rough out in the wild. You don't get fig cakes. You don't really eat a lot of raisins. Now, you might get some wild grapes. You know, you might come by a muscadine vine and get some, you know, like you would if you were walking out on a fence row somewhere. But raisins are something that it takes time for them to basically dry out. It's a dehydration process. And so these cakes, these raisins, that's something that's pretty special. I thought about this last Sunday. Downstairs, we had a shower for one of the girls that grew up in our church, Ashley Edge. And as I went downstairs to find out if my wife was going to just eat there or if we needed to go somewhere, she said, there's plenty of food. Why don't you just go over there and eat and we won't go out? So I'm thinking, I'm the only guy here, but I'm not proud. I'll eat. So I went over and I got a few little cheese crackers and some meatballs. And then I got down to the end of the table and there was a punch bowl. Now I'm going to tell you something. I like that punch. I like that punch whenever they put that ginger ale in it. And then they'll put some ice cream in it. And I mean, you can drink ginger ale normally, and I like ginger ale. But when they begin to add that other stuff in it and you start drinking that stuff, it's like there's a party going on in your mouth. Okay? I mean, it's like, ooh, I like that stuff. And so these guys, they're not used to raisin cakes. I mean, they're eating high on the hog, we would say. And so we see that she is not only generous, but she's offering the best. Is that not what we're supposed to offer to God? We're supposed to give God our best. We don't take a sheep that's got an eye that's put out. We don't take a little lamb or a little goat that's got a broken leg. You don't take a pigeon dove that's got a broken wing. Oh, no, no. You examine that animal before you would ever sacrifice it to God. Well, we're supposed to give to God a sweet-smelling savor. That's what we're to offer to the Lord. And so there wasn't a lot of work for these guys to do. I mean, when you've got five dressed sheep, all you've got to do is get a fire going and put it on the spit and just begin to turn that thing. And a few hours later, you got a barbecue. Yesterday, I had one of the young men in the church. We went over to try to help one of the widow ladies with a problem that she was having. And after we got finished, I told him, I said, hey, let me take you out to eat. And I said, as dirty as we are, the only place we can go is Waffle House. And so we went to the Waffle House. Well, as we were pulling out of the subdivision, there was about 40 cars. And they were just lined up, pulled straight in on the grass at a corner house. And there was a party going on. And as I went by, there was some kid on a mechanical bull. And that kid was just going around like he was riding a mechanical bull from the 1980s. And I'm telling you, those people were having a party. It was festive. And so these guys, they were getting ready to have a party, and all they had to do was just cook the lamb. They had already been dressed. Well, whenever we see the speed and see the supplies, there's something else that I want you to see. I want you to see a little parenthesis here in verse number 21. And this is David. Now, David is yet to meet Abigail. He doesn't know Abigail even exists. All right? All David knows, Nabal. When I get to Nabal, he's history. Not only that, the men and the boys that are able to be of fighting age, their history. Look with me at verse 21. And David had said, surely in vain. Now David's talking, he's probably talking to himself. He's talking to those that are around him. And he said, surely in vain have I kept all that this fellow hath in the wilderness. In other words, he didn't give us a single thing for the work that we did, the protection that we gave him, and he's working himself up into a frenzy. I mean, he's getting ready to go. You guys that are big Georgia fans for a long time, you remember Irk Russell? He was the defensive coach back when Vince Dooley was the head coach. Went down to Georgia Southern for a while. He was a big, burly guy with a bald head, like mine. I mean, no hair. And before a game, he'd have those defensive linemen and linebackers, and he'd have them in front of him, and he'd be going, we got to get them, we got to get them, we got to get them. And he'd get them so psyched up, he would take his head and he would headbutt them, but he didn't have a helmet on. They had a helmet, but he didn't. And I can't tell you the number of times I saw the pictures of old Irk, and I mean, there'd be blood coming down his face, and he's like, we got to get them. And I'm thinking, that guy's crazy. That's exactly what I'm thinking. He's nuts. But David is rehearsing this, and the more he thinks about it, the madder he gets. Have you ever gotten mad about something, and the more you think about it, the madder you get? This is David right here. He said, in vain I have kept this fellow's, and he said, everything he had in the wilderness, and there wasn't a thing missing. We didn't take one little animal out of his flock. What does he say? He hath requited me. He has given to me evil for the good. And then he says, so and more so. In other words, I'm going to do this, and if I don't do it, God does it to me. So and more also do God unto the enemies of David, if I leave all that pertain to him by morning light, any that pisseth against the wall. Now that's a little hard to read in the pulpit, all right? But it's in the Bible, so that's why I didn't skip it. It's not something that you would say often from the pulpit. But basically what this means is, if you look at that word, all that pertained, the word all there is a Hebrew word that it denotes masculinity. All right? So you're talking about men, not women, but men. And then it gives the description about what they do. So who can do this? Well, men that aren't really in diapers. So in other words, you got a man, what does he do? If he doesn't have indoor plumbing, which they didn't have in ancient times a lot, he goes outside, finds a place of privacy halfway, takes care of business first thing in the morning. All right? And so David is saying, if those guys are able to go outside and take care of business in the morning, they're dead. Abigail sees these dominoes falling. And she's thinking, I have got to somehow keep him from killing these men. I've got to keep him from killing these boys. Because he's coming with 400 armed soldiers. And we've heard the stories about what he has done and how he's annihilated the enemies of the people of God. And now he's coming after us. And so we see that little parentheses. Now, we've seen the speed. We saw the supplies. Now I want you to look quickly at the speech. Beginning in verse 23, Abigail is the central character. It says, she saw David. She hasted. She lighted off the ass and fell before David on her face and bowed herself to the ground, fell at his feet. And so we see there is a respect that she is offering to David. That's a far, far cry from what's happened probably either the morning of the same day or the day before, when those 10 men came to Nabal, her husband, and said, look, we've been offering protection for your stuff. Would you just make a donation so that our people have something to eat, these soldiers that have been protecting you? And Nabal rails on them. But that's not her attitude. Oh, no, 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 no. She's got more sense than her husband does. And so what does she do? She respects David. Does the Bible say that a soft answer turneth away wrath? It absolutely says that. There are times when you have people and they are livid. But if you'll just say something kind of soft, sometime it can calm them down. And so we see that there's a respect that she gives David. And then she begins to speak. And she says this: upon me, my Lord, upon me let this iniquity be. I want you to notice that she repents for something that she didn't even do. I know whenever I was in school, and if we were getting in trouble about something and I didn't do it, I'd say, I didn't do it. What are you getting me in trouble for? I didn't do it. She takes the blame for something that she did not do. Evidently, because she was associated with her husband, she felt the need to include herself in this. And David's got to be thinking, this lady's different. I mean, with some of the problems that he had with his first wife, Michael, he's thinking, this lady's different. And so we see her, and she begins to repent. And let thine handmaid, I pray thee, speak in thine audience. In other words, she is showing him so much respect. She's taking the blame for something that she did not do. And so she said this: Lord, or let not my Lord, I pray thee, regard this man of Belial. You know, that's what the servant called him. She's agreeing with the servant. Evidently, everybody but Nabal knew that he was a fool. He thought he was the smartest guy in the room, and he was really the dumbest. And so she said this, "For as his name is, so is he." And it says, "Nabal is his name, and folly is with him." And I couldn't help but want to say this, Nabal is his name and folly is his game. All right? In other words, the man is just not bright. You know, there's a comedian that says you just can't fix stupid. All right? And so I think that Nabal is that type of guy. And so she says, "But I, thine handmaiden, saw not the young men of my lord, whom thou didst send." In other words, the 10 men, I didn't see them. And he says, now "therefore, my lord, as the Lord liveth and as thy soul liveth, seeing the Lord hath withholden thee from coming to shed blood and from avenging thyself with thine own hand, now let thine enemies and they that seek evil to my lord be as Nabal." Whenever you see what's going on with this lady, you just see the wisdom just exuding from her. You know, sometimes when you're asking for something, how and when you ask is smarter sometimes than other times. Let me just give you a little word of advice. If you're on a job and your boss is having a really bad day, that's probably not the time to ask for something personal. Now you go, "Well, I don't care what his day's like. I just gotta get this done." Well, can I tell you that you gather more bees with honey than you do with yarn? If you want to attract something that's sweet, why don't you have some flowers with some nectar in it? And so the way you ask, when you ask, is important. And right here, the way she's asking is beautiful. As a matter of fact, Matthew Henry made this statement. Let me see if I can find it here. It says, "No topic of argument is left untouched by Abigail. Everything is well placed and well expressed." This lady knew how to present an argument before the future king. And so, she's respectful. She's reverent. Not only that, but she also acknowledges that David is going to be the king. Isn't that different than Nabal did? Who is this David? Who is this son of Jesse? He's basically a runaway slave. That's what Nabal said about David, the man who had protected his investments. Oh, but not her. Look with me at verse 28. She said, "I pray thee, forgive the trespass of thine handmaid." Again, she's accepting responsibility for something she didn't even do. And somebody said, "Well, why do you think she would do that?" Because she's trying to save her husband's life, right? And she said in verse 28, "Please forgive your handmaiden." And then it says, "For the Lord, Jehovah, will certainly make my Lord David a sure house. Because my Lord David fighteth the battles of the Lord, Jehovah, and evil hath not been found in thee all thy days." In other words, she's recognizing that David is doing the work of God and that he's going to be king because God's going to see to it. Can you just see how she diffuses the situation? I mean, she's got the realization that these men's lives are in the palm of her hand. And she's doing everything she can to try to calm the wrath of David down. And so now she invokes God. Look at verse 29. She says, "Yet a man is risen to pursue thee and to seek thy soul." Saul, he's trying to pursue him and seek him. "But the soul of my Lord David shall be bound in the bundle of life." That's a phrase which means the soul of my Lord David is protected. He is bundled up in the bundle of life with the Lord, which is Jehovah, thy God, and the souls of thine enemies, them shall he, Jehovah, sling out as out of the middle of a sling. Do you think it was just a coincidence that she put a sling in there? Do you not think that even though David is probably knocking 30 right now, do you not remember when he was about 16 and there was a big giant Philistine and he took a sling out that he had been practicing with as a shepherd boy and he slung that rock and it hit him between the eyes and he went down and he was dead as a hammer. And to make sure, he took the giant's own sword and cut his head off with his own sword. And so, she's invoking God. Look with me at verse 31. "That this shall be no grief unto thee." In other words, when you get to be the ruler over Israel, when you get to be the king, this is going to be not anything for you to ever worry about. Okay? That's what she's thinking. And she's trying to convince him of this. "Nor offense of the heart unto my Lord, the king, either that thou hast shed blood causeless." In other words, you really don't want to be grieved over killing people. These guys didn't have anything to do with it. It was my foolish husband, the son of Belial. And so, "or that the Lord, my Lord, David, the king, has avenged himself. But when the Lord, Jehovah, shall have dealt well with my Lord, then remember thine handmaid." In other words, just forget about this. This is no big deal to you. You're going to be the king. We're nobodies. Hey, take the bread. Take the wine. Take the dressed sheep. Take the clusters of raisins. Take the fig cakes. Just take it. Use it. Enjoy it. Just don't kill them. That's basically what she's saying. And so she recognizes that he's going to be king one day. But then one final thing is found in verse 26. She makes sure that he knows that God is in control of him. There's a restraint that God has placed on him. Now remember, he's seeing red. This guy won't even give us some provisions. I'm going to take him out. And everybody that goes outside in the morning, I'm just going to take him out. But look at verse 26. "Now therefore, my Lord, as the Lord liveth and as thy soul liveth, seeing the Lord, Jehovah God, has withholden thee from coming to shed blood." In other words, she's saying, "King, because I'm here and because of what I'm doing, that's the Lord restraining you from doing something that you're going to feel sorry for later." And so she invokes God's name as a way to stop the bloodshed. And when you read her speech, you just see a lady that knows how to put an argument together. You see a woman that she's 1,000 times smarter than the guy she's married to. This has got to be an arranged marriage. That's all there is to it. And so we see Abigail, this godly woman, full of wisdom. And then she's able to calm basically a savage beast down, because I mean, he is just seething like an animal. He is ready to kill. He's got blood in his eyes and he's headed to do the deed. But she's able to stop him in his tracks by the supplies, by the speed in which she acted, and by the persuasion of her soft answers and the way in which she presented those. We see a woman that was married to a fool. That's going to change next week. Nabal doesn't have a clue what she's doing right now. If he would have known what she is doing, he would have probably tried to stop her. I'm glad that God did not let Nabal find out about this until next time we have a lesson. He's going to hear about it after he gets finished being drunk one night. And when that happens, Abigail's going to become a widow. Not by David's hand. It'll be by God's hand. Well, thank you for being here tonight. Let's stand together.